one of our friends had tickets to a Moth main stage show and said, "You want to go?" And we had no idea what this thing was. And it changed my life. It was magical.
Welcome to Created Creative. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Ruth.
And I'm wearing new glasses.
Those are very cool glasses. They look like aquamarine blue.
Yeah. This was my sorority's theme color.
Oh, I heard that your alma mater is considering some big cuts.
Valparaiso.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are reevaluating like 26 majors. And it's been fascinating in the alumni community. Everyone fully went to my major's being cut. And I don't think that's what it means. I think it means some will get more specialized, some will get more general, maybe some will be cut.
There's a lot of chatter.
Also, would we rather have a whatever ancient Eastern philosophy major, which I don't even know if we have, but would we rather have this really obscure major and have the school shut down because they can't balance the budget? I don't think that's our goal.
Yeah, exactly. But I was curious your thoughts on it, since I have seen a lot of chatter about it on Facebook, and I knew that was your place that you went. Yeah. And the truth is that all sorts of organizations have to make difficult decisions.
Yeah. Anything else that happened this week?
I just started listening to a podcast because there's a woman who actually graduated from my alma mater, Concordia, in Moorhead, who got a Distinguished Alumni Award because she's written a number of bestsellers about storytelling in marketing. So she'd grown up with this. She just loved storytelling and did it in all the ways you can, you know, in high school with speech and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And she always just thought of it as a hobby, but then she's turned it into this career to use storytelling in marketing.
So your distinguished alumni you just mentioned was about storytelling, and so is Andrea.
Yeah, that was what made me think of it.
She's
super cool.
Super cool.
Yeah, we loved talking to Andrea, and I loved her story of how she got involved with the Moth. And
Yes, a life-changing moment. She knew in a moment this was a thing. How many times in life does that happen?
Yeah, she just knew. She was like, oh, I have to do this thing. And then it did change her life. And then you wonder, did she manifest it into being?
Also, how many people actually do the thing?
Yeah. How many people think that would be really cool, but then they don't do it. Mm-hmm. But she thought, oh, this is what I want to do. And she went and did it. And it has changed her life. So anyway, anything else going on with you?
In our music class, we go to be around other toddlers. Oh. I can sing at home. And so part of being around other toddlers is her first injury. Boy. Like some other kid just totally pushed her over to the floor. It was more shocking. She's not hurt.
Yeah.
The thing about it is everyone else looking at how I'm dealing with it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It was a lot of things.
A lot going on. At church, there's probably other kids she hangs out with.
A little bit. But our playground, like the little play area in church, it's overtaken by bigger kids.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, it feels dangerous to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Although she just got hurt at music class with toddlers, so who knows? But some of those kids are really good with babies, like their particular personality, or they have a baby in their family. Mm-hmm. Other ones are just not attuned yet to knowing who's around them the way many middle schoolers are, upper elementary middle schoolers. And so the playground seems dangerous for a toddler to me.
Yeah.
And actually, a toddler last week started crying, and I don't know what happened, but I was like, oh. Evidence. I don't know the compassionate way to deal with that, because they deserve to be somewhere.
Right. Yeah. If there could be two or something. It's funny you bring up playgrounds, because it seems to me I read when I was reading about Andrea was she coined that term playground. Like it was her church.
What?
Yeah. That started that, because I remember reading an article that was talking about the playground and how she started it. And
I just brought it up randomly.
Yeah. I remember seeing it before we talked to her and then again after. And I was like, oh, we should have talked about that, because that's pretty big, because that's a term so many churches use now.
And it's so big that people just think it's a common now. That's what it's called.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I think it was like a Lutheran article that talked about that it started with her and her church.
And she was learning to tell moth stories.
Yeah. I'm sure it was before the moth even. So we were lucky to have her on our show.
Wow. Not only a four-time winner at the Moth, which is a big deal, but the inventor, the coiner of term, playground, which has now swept the nation.
I know. Yeah.
This is not to be missed.
Yes, not to be missed. So enjoy this interview with Andrea.
Hi, I'm Andrea.
Hi. Welcome.
Thanks. Andrea, I'm Ruth.
Hi,
it's
Ruth.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And I'm Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
I'm so happy that you were able to join us. Rich Bresford Colligan had spoken about you and said how wonderful you were. And in case that our listeners aren't familiar with you, would you mind sharing with us a little bit about
you? Yeah, sure. My name is Andrea Rasky Metcalf. I am an ELCA pastor at Diamond Lake Lutheran Church in South Minneapolis. I have been there almost a year. My first Sunday was Palm Sunday of last year. So I am just a few weeks away from the 1 year mark, and I'm pretty excited.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, it feels like a big deal. That feels like a good fit for me. I've been there almost a year, and I do storytelling on the side. I do storytelling workshops with congregations and community groups, and some just for my own good fun.
How'd you get into it? Why do you love it?
Yeah, these are good questions. So I got into storytelling by way of The Moth. And some people know The Moth from the radio hour or the podcast through NPR, but I did not know what that was. I discovered The Moth in 2015. My whole family and I were visiting friends in Boston, and one of our friends had tickets to a Moth main stage show and said, "You want to go?" And we had no idea what this thing was. And as it turned out, his spouse and my spouse both got sick. And so it just ended up being the two of us. And it changed my life. That night changed my life. It was magical. There were five stories. Moth events are live. True stories told live, I think is their tagline, right? And usually they're 5 minutes each, but main stage shows are more curated. And so they're 10 minutes each. Five stories for those. And after three, there was an intermission. And my friend Jeff and I were just hanging out during the intermission. And I was like vibrating from my life having been changed in this last hour. And I was trying to play it real cool. That hadn't happened. And I said, "I don't know, would you ever want to do that? Tell a story on the stage?" And he was like, "Oh, no, I would never do." And I said, "Oh, would Hannah ever want to do that?" His wife. And he was like, "No, Hannah would never do." We're all pastors. And he said, "Would Luke ever do that?" My husband. And he was like, "No, Luke would never do that." And then there was this awkward pause.
Didn't ask you.
Right. And then finally, then I was like, "I think I need to do that." And so I went home that night and figured out how to do it and never looked back.
And you've won it. Is it twice you've won it?
I have won three story slams, which is where you just put your name in the hat and it's amateur night. They draw names. Okay. So I've been in three grand slams and I've won one of those.
Okay.
So
yeah. I want to know what a storytelling workshop is. What do people learn?
Yeah. So I don't know if this has been true for you or if it feels true for most people. I find that in general, things that people are innately good at, they are terrible at teaching. Like we're best at teaching the things that don't come naturally to us because we understand the struggles. This is the only thing I have found in my own life that I have innate gifts for and I'm good at teaching. And so I have found different ways to do that in communities, either in really large group settings where we're all just in the same room, and then sometimes with a small group of people, and we're going to actually workshop your stories and offer boundaried feedback and get from point A to point B and then have an event or something.
Do you do this in congregations?
Yeah, I do. I've found that it has been really effective in particular seasons of congregations because we can have a theme for the stories. I've done this in a large congregation where the theme for Lent was wilderness. And so we curated, workshopped stories of wilderness. And then those were used in the sermon portion of midweek Lenten service. They were videoed in that case. I worked with a congregation recently who they were in the middle of their reconciling in Christ process, right? Like deciding whether to be officially open and affirming for folks of all gender identities and expressions and sexual orientations. And so for that group, the theme was belonging. So it wasn't like, tell stories about gay people, right? It wasn't that.
Right.
It was stories of belonging because at the end of the day, that was the point. And that opened it up for people to interpret that in all kinds of different ways. And so I found that it's especially helpful when congregations are in a particular season. Or stewardship,
and then
right?
It presents itself.
Yeah, for sure. The theme presents itself. And stewardship is especially ripe for this kind of thing too, right? Stories are what inspire people to want to be a part of something. We don't need the accountant to get up and give a temple talk about how far in the red we are. Nobody wants to give to that.
And yet that happens all the time.
Like we just shoot ourselves in the foot over and over again.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So how often do you go into congregations and do a workshop like this?
It varies from season to season. And I have a full-time job. Maybe once a month. But sometimes these events are multi-week situations too, so it just depends.
Yeah, but I can see how valuable that would be for congregations to think about that and to learn to tell their stories in those ways.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Have they come back to you with stories of the impact of the stories? Or
yeah.
have you been in the congregation that's doing it?
Yes. In one congregation, they came back and said the congregation president had been a part of workshopping specific stories. And then she had taken this practice to a degree to the church council and had used a few of the things that I had taught and invited council members to tell stories as the opening devotion then for the next year of church council meetings, things like that. But one of the biggest takeaways tends to be that we don't think about storytelling as a craft that you can practice and that you can improve and that you can stop and think about, okay, if I'm going to get up in front of the congregation or get up in front of my board or whatever it might be, am I actually going to say things that are the most effective, or are there better ways to go about getting this message across? Do I have to cut my favorite part in order to communicate what I'm actually trying to say? The answer is probably yes, mm-hmm. right? But
yeah.
you need to be told those things. Thanks. And then you start to be able to recognize them. But I think we have this understanding that either we're all just storytellers in some form or fashion, or some of us are and some of us aren't. And there's not anything we can do to change that. And once we recognize it as a craft that we can practice, that becomes more powerful in community especially.
Have you or might you turn this workshop into a book?
I haven't thought about that.
We're all ready for everybody to make more things.
Yeah. But I was just thinking about like my own little congregation. I serve part-time. It'd be a great thing, but not everybody can bring Andrea all the way to where they are.
Yep.
And I think it would be a wonderful resource.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Think about that. I have done them virtually. It works better virtually than I thought it would.
Yeah.
It's still not the same.
How are you doing it? Like the Moth is not faith-based.
No.
I read like the book they put out.
Sure.
What have you added as a Lutheran pastor? Or how are you doing it differently than just the Moth framework?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure that the way that I teach the actual craft is different or not. I don't know. But it's certainly not faith-based. One of the things I say right out of the gate is that we might be sitting in a church, but this is not a churchy thing that we're doing. This is not preaching. This is not stand-up comedy. This is not fundraising, right? Like, it's useful in all of those things. But at the end of the day, it's just its own thing. And then it gets used in all these different ways. I think the difference when I'm in a faith community as opposed to a secular organization is that there are different ways to use it. There are different outlets for it. And it depends on the faith community, I think. But to a degree, we might be more ready to go a little deeper than your colleagues at the office would be.
Yes.
In theory.
Mm-hmm. Well, more of you is available. At the office, you might not want to tell everyone you're even Christian.
Yeah. And so in all cases, faith-based and secular, I think that when people are invited to actually tell their story instead of to just answer the question, how are you? How was your weekend? We drop down pretty fast because there aren't many spaces where we're actually invited to do that. So it doesn't take much, I don't find.
I love this because we've had people, correct me if I'm wrong, Ruth, most people are working on their craft alone with a partner and then putting it out there. Mm-hmm. You might be our first guest in which the craft is in community from the first word.
Oh, yeah. My understanding of storytelling is it's just pure gift. There's no agenda, which is what makes it different. There's always an agenda in a sermon. I don't care. People will say that's not true. It is. There's always an agenda. There's always an agenda in a comedy routine, right? You're trying to get the laugh. There's always an agenda in a fundraising speech. There's always an agenda in a campaign speech. There's always an agenda. It's hard to think of ways that we interact today without agenda. But storytelling at its core is pure gift. I'm getting up in front of people and I'm going to offer a piece of myself to you. And that's it. That's the whole point. And it's a rush, right? The Moth format especially is there's no note. It's just you and the microphone. Mm-hmm. You can't even move the microphone. It's on a stand and you're not allowed to move it. You just stand there. No notes, no props. And you just offer this gift to the people who are there and they receive it with delight in my experience because they're terrified on your behalf.
Right. They know you're up there with no notes.
Yes,
you're a real human standing in front of them.
Yeah. Everyone knows what's happening. But it's also just a gift to be doing that. And it's a rush. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen without the people listening. You can't do it on your own. You could record it and then put it out in the world, but it's not the same. It's not the same at all.
So at the live events, I imagine you have to sign up beforehand, right? Can anybody just stand up and participate? How does that work?
For the Moth?
Yeah.
So for the story slams, which take place all over the country, and the timing depends on how popular. I think in New York, it's every week. Here in the Twin Cities, it's once a month, usually. The topic gets published months in advance, the theme of the night, but you can't sign up ahead. You just fill out a waiver that night. You have to buy a ticket, whether you're going to tell a story or not, and you fill out the form and you drop it in a hat. Uh-oh. And 10 names get chosen. And the most stressful part of it, I think, is that they don't all get chosen at the beginning. They and then you're on.
Whoa, yeah. That is very stressful to me.
Yeah, it's super stressful. One of the ones that I told the story for, my name was drawn 10th.
So you thought, oh, it's probably not me. You'd let it go.
And I didn't get a beer, right?
Yeah.
I never get a drink before then. But if you don't know if you're going to go at all, because usually there's more than 10 mm-hmm. names in a hat. But then the Grand Slams are 10 winners from Story Slams.
Oh, okay.
And it's a new theme and it's a new story. And you know you're going to be on, you know the theme in advance. And the only thing that gets decided the night of is the order. But you know that you're going to be there and you know what the theme is. The bummer for that is that at least for a story slam, when it's amateur night, you know the theme in advance and you can decide what to put your name in or not. I do have a story for this or I don't, so I'm not going to. For the Grand Slam, you have to say yes before you know what the theme is.
So you might not have an appropriate story.
You better figure one out. Yeah.
What was your theme of your Grand Slam that you won?
Out on a Limb.
Ooh.
So they're very abstract themes.
They're very abstract and they're very evocative. They always give a paragraph. They kind of explode the theme out into all different directions that you could take it to get your juices flowing on different ways that you could interpret it. So sometimes it's a phrase, sometimes it's just a word.
I watched, it was so good. The story, you were talking about all these things that your daughter was bringing home in her backpack. Was that a story slam?
That was a story slam. Yep. I didn't win that night. That was a night where I came in with a story that I knew I wanted to tell and I tried to fit it into the theme. You shouldn't do that, but I did.
How has the storytelling changed you?
That's a good question. You all ask good questions. So I came to this craft when my kids were like 2 and 6. And so I was in the thick of all the things, right? Like the daycare drop-offs and the kindergarten, first grade stuff. And I was a full-time pastor and it was only for me. There's nothing in this for my family. Now there is because I don't do workshops for free, but I'm still away from them when I do those. But especially these early days when it was just me doing this for the moth, it was just for me. And there wasn't much in my life at the time. I loved my life at the time, but there was very little that was just for me. And that was just for me. And it felt really good and sort of scandalous. You're not supposed to have little kids and have a house and lots of responsibilities and just do stuff for yourself, except you should. And the pull with this was that strong that I just didn't care. People thought I should be doing it or not. And I wasn't getting pushback. It was all in my own head. But I come alive when I'm doing that in ways that I don't when I'm doing other things. And I would assume that the two of you know this, and I hope the people who are listening to this know this. But when you find something that does that to you, you should pursue it. That stuff doesn't come along very often. And that's what I found that night in Boston, right? Watching these people, discovering what this was and realizing that it was a thing I could do too. And I love watching other people in that space. Like you can tell when other people are in that zone. I love going to live theater for that reason. When you find someone who's in the perfect role for them, it's magic. It changes you.
Do you still do the story slams regularly?
I've never done them regularly because they're always on Wednesday nights here and I usually work. And June is the next one that I could see on the schedule where the theme is something I have a story for. And in June, I don't work on Wednesdays. So maybe I'll toss my name in that night. We'll see.
Oh, that's great. That's so interesting. And it's fun to learn more about the whole process and how that works. So thank you for sharing about it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Is your preaching story heavy because it's the thing that brings you alive? Or how has this affected that?
That's a good question. Sometimes I feel like it should have changed my preaching more than it has. You're not the first person who's asked me that. I am generally a manuscript preacher. And apart from the very first time I did live storytelling, I have never written anything down. I just walk around my house talking to myself. That's my new official process. And the preparation for storytelling without notes is really intense. In my case, I don't know that that's true for everybody, but it's a lot. I would not be able to do that every week. I wouldn't be able to pull it off every week and still do all the other stuff that I have to do. I would say that when my sermon is particularly good, it's pretty story heavy. Does that happen every week?
No.
Does my congregation get a lot of butter and jelly sandwiches? Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll see Raleigh too, right?
Yeah.
But I think it has cracked open for me other possibilities for preaching. It doesn't always have to look the same.
So who are some of your favorite storytellers?
Oh, gosh. I think some of my favorite storytellers are kids, actually, because they haven't had it beaten out of them that they're not good at this yet. My favorite part of worship is the Sermon on the Steps, interacting with the kids and talking about the story, the gospel story or whatever it is we're talking about that day, and then hearing what they have to say about it, because they're not afraid the way the grown-ups are. Myself included, we're afraid to say what we think of church or about scripture or about whatever, and the kids are not afraid.
That is true. Talked a little bit about your creative process when you are working on a story, that you're walking around the house. Yeah. When you're working on something else creative, do you need it quiet or do you listen to music or do you time of day?
Yeah, time of day matters. Late morning is good. Late afternoon is good. I've heard that Baroque music is what you should listen to while you write.
I've heard that too.
Huh. I've never actually done that. I just keep remembering that and not doing it. So maybe one of these days I'll start. I'm really good with background noise. I love writing a sermon while my spouse is watching football, because I do not understand football and I have no desire to. So it's just noise to me. And I can get all kinds of stuff done that way.
What will you do till the fall? We're done.
I don't know. We'll have to find some other sport I don't care about. But no, I don't have a really hard, fast process for any of this stuff. And when I'm preparing for a story, it's all hands on deck. So I just ignore everyone in my life for about a week and a half and just walk around talking to myself. And I talk to myself while I drive, and I talk to myself while I garden, and I talk to myself while I cook. And I'm just going through iteration after iteration, because all of my stories start out too long. And then I have to cut all my favorite parts.
But you do all that in your head. You don't have dress run with your family or something.
No, I told one story for the Moth to some friends before I told it on the stage. And I don't like doing it, I've decided. I want the first time that anyone hears it to be when I do it.
In the venue.
And I do the same for preaching, actually. I don't rehearse sermons. And I love now I'm in a congregation that only has one service. And I love that. I love preaching to one service, because we're all getting the same thing. You got one shot. That's not the practice run. It's not, well, this didn't go well, so what am I going to do over here? And saying it out loud, it sounds like that would be better, to have more. I don't like more. I like one. We're just going to do this once. Yeah, we're not going to try to recreate it.
Yeah. For the 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Right. I've been in a lot of settings where that was true. And in some cases, it was another day. There's two services on Sunday, and now you have one on Wednesday, and you have to try to imagine yourself 4 days ago and do it again. That's hard. I'd rather just have one shot.
I think so, too.
Make or break.
If somebody wants to be better at storytelling, are there common things you observe with the beginners in the workshops or just in life? Or is there, here's three quick tips, or is that too surfacey?
No, that's not too surfacey. One of them I've already referenced a couple of times. You're going to have to cut your favorite part. I think the stories, when we're trying to tell a story on a certain theme or for a certain purpose, the stories in our heads are always the parts that are so important to us actually water down what it is that we're trying to accomplish. It's so much bigger in our head. And you just have to pull one thread. That's the story. It's just one thread. It's not all of this other stuff, even though that mattered to you. And that was what's in your head. It's just this one piece. I think pulling that one piece is really hard. I think that's one of the hardest things for folks at the beginning. And then the other one that I would say, that I do a whole series of these in the workshops, but the other one that's coming to me right now is actually from an episode of Top Chef, where the judges say, don't tell people how to eat. If these chefs are bringing something to the table and it's so fancy and intricate and weird that you have to explain how to eat it, don't do that, right? Just give people their food and let them enjoy their food. I hate when this happens at the Moth all the time, at Story Slams especially, where here's the theme, right? And at the end of the story, the person will say, so the way that this connects to blah, blah, blah. And I just think, if you have to say that, you have
it should be us.
It should be obvious. Part of it is, I don't want you to have to tell me. The story should have communicated that. But also then you narrow down people's interpretation. Right. Like, right. I might have gotten it already, but it's something beyond even what you had thought. And I think this is true of both storytelling and preaching, I think, where so many times we feel like in order to connect with the wide array of people in our audience or our congregation, we have to keep our preaching or our storytelling really generic, like really And I don't mean not deep. We can't get too specific or else it won't connect with this person or that person because it's not their experience. And I find the opposite is true. I think the more generic we keep it, the less nobody can get a hold of it then. But the more specific it is, even if it's not someone else's experience, you invite them in and they'll come with you because they realize that you're giving them this gift. And so they'll follow you in. And so I would say to people, don't keep it generic, right? Give us a lot of surface area to grab onto.
That's a thing in screenwriting. Mm-hmm. The more specific you can make the world of your show,
yes,
the more universal the truth coming out of it.
Yes. That's totally it. That's totally it. Okay. And it's counterintuitive, but it matters. It makes a big difference.
They say that's true with subscription boxes too, actually.
They
talk about how, because you would think the more general you make it, oh, it would appeal to more people. But no, you have to narrow the niche of people that it appeals to. And then you get more people actually interested.
That makes sense to me.
It appeals across, that concept appeals across the board.
Yeah. Huh. That's cool.
So one question, Andrea, that we always ask is, how do you see creativity and spirituality connect?
I think that when we are at our most creative, that we are at our most authentic. And when we are at our most authentic, we are at our most sort of God-created self. Some of the moments that I've already talked about, when I feel especially alive, when I feel most like myself, I feel especially close to God in that space because it feels like, okay, here I am being who I was created to be and not just who other people expect me to be, because that's what I do most of the week. And now I've taken some of that back.
I like that question.
I like that you like our questions. I'm feeling very affirmed by you.
And yes, I'm glad.
Yes.
Thank you.
One thing that we always offer, Dawn is a coach and she's been a fabulous life coach for several decades. And if you have a project that you're working on or you're thinking of the next steps in something that you're working on and you might like to have a little coaching on it, we were just curious if that's something you would like.
You should probably coach me on this book project that you've decided.
It just came up.
Yeah, I feel good about that. I'd like to do that.
So what twinged for you? Why did that resonate with the book?
I don't know. So I like to write. I'm a writer. I'll claim that title. I'm a writer. I'm a good writer. I would like to write a book. I don't know what my book will be about. Maybe this is what my book will be about.
How do you find out things like that when it's so wide open? Like, how do you pick a story or what other times have you had to pick a topic when there's a huge choice to be made?
Yeah, I'm not good at that. This is one of the reasons why I'm a lectionary preacher.
Really? So it picks the story for you?
Yeah. And sometimes I don't like being a lectionary preacher because I don't like whatever story I have assigned to me. But I appreciate the fact that I don't have to, when I go places and guest preach and they say, just choose a text. Right. I hate that. And so when I was in seminary, I went to Union Seminary in New York and I took several courses with Janet Walton, who is amazing. And one of them was called Worship in the Arts. And we read a book by a woman whose name I am now forgetting, but she was a theater director professor at Columbia University. And one of the things that she talked about in her book was when theater director students were first starting out directing stage productions, one of the biggest things they would always do wrong at the beginning was offer too little direction. And so the actors would just not know what to do. And her whole point was the more boundaries you put up, the more the actors will take risks because they see where the boundary is and they can tell when they're pushing up against it and they can tell when they've blown right past it. But if they don't have any boundaries at all, they don't know where the edge is and they just stand there in the middle. In this case, we were talking about worship planning and creating boundaries for worship, explaining things during worship, making sure that if you're going to do something creative, you give your people enough instruction so that they feel brave and safe in taking that risk. So yeah, you could write a book about anything. What would you like to write about? I can't answer that question. Yeah. It's too big.
You are similar. I think it's Twyla Tharp. At the beginning of each improv modern dance session, she makes a boundary. Like, today we're not using our left arm or something. But there's always a boundary. She's more creative within it.
Yes. Yeah. If you give me an essay topic, I can write an essay in 30 minutes. But if you say you can write an essay on anything you want, it's going to take me 2 weeks.
So do you want to take Ruth's assignment? Make a book outline based on storytelling for congregation.
Yeah, probably. We should do that.
Okay. What's the deadline? Can you do it in 2 weeks?
Write a book in 2 weeks?
The outline. A one-page proposal as though we are your editor, your book agent.
Sure.
Awesome. That was so easy. Does that feel life-giving, or are you just being agreeable because you're a nice person?
Do I have to do it in the next 2 weeks, or could the 2 weeks start after Lent is over?
Totally. Let's pick a different day. So March 31st is Easter. April 15, tax day.
April 15.
Can you do it by tax day?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we'll look for your outline on April 15. What's going to be on that page?
I don't know. You tell me what should be on the page.
Some sort of abstract story treatment, or however your brain works, a table of contents, or what's going to be written on the back of the book, that summary sort of thing.
Yep.
Who the market is, that's on a real book proposal. What book is it similar to? What section of Barnes & Noble will it go into? Any of those things. A title if you have it.
I'm just writing all these things down.
Totally, yes. Anything for us to know the vibe.
The vibe, got it.
We want the vibe.
I think it would be just a wonderful resource for people. And when I asked you, I thought maybe you'd already written that book. So, you know, it's just a matter of you sitting down and doing it, because in my mind, it already existed.
Yeah, I love having someone believe in me like this.
Ruth's so good at that.
I can't wait to see the outline. Will you send me a copy of the outline when you finish it?
I sure will.
Okay.
So fun. I'm excited about this book. I feel like a lot of churches are not telling their story well.
Oh, yeah, most of them. No, this isn't
an aside, but I do the live stream with a friend at church.
Yep.
And forefront of our mind is, how do we tell this story? Not how do we make a record of the event and put it on the internet? How do we involve those people in the story? And it's not rocket science, but that's just one small way I can see this applying for churches. It's not just for the preacher.
Oh, yeah. And if the preacher will get out of the way,
then we'll tell stories.
Yeah. And I say that as a preacher. I'm the only pastor in my church. People are ready for this. And I think they crave it in a way post-pandemic that we didn't crave it before that. It's connection. We are hungry for that in a way that maybe we always were, but we didn't always know it in quite the same way.
A couple interims ago, the church had a tradition during Lent. The sermons at the midweek services were just one person each week sharing their faith story. And it had started like a few years before. And of course, it had been really hard to find people to do it. But now that they had been doing it a few years and everybody knew what to expect, it was easy to find people to do it. And it was just beautiful. And tons of people would come to these services just because it was so moving to hear their peers talking about their faith story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's different kind of connection.
It really is. Yeah. But like now at my current church, they don't have that tradition. I was trying to start it, but they're all just terrified because it's a brand new thing.
Yeah. We brought someone in just last month to teach the congregation how to do one-to-ones, right? Like just a one-to-one conversation. And this is a congregation where a lot of people have been there for 40 years, 50 years, right? There's some newer folks too, but a lot of people have been there for a really long time and they know each other very well. And so this guest came in and taught this process. And then the next week they had to do the thing, right? People paired up and they were really worried at first. And they came away from that saying, I've known this person for 30 years and I learned things tonight that I've never known. When are we doing this again? And so we've decided that we're going to do it once a month after church. Just whoever wants to come, here's a quick little recap in case you weren't here before. Here's how this works and go do your thing. Because people are hungry for it. But it's scary at first, right? So again, we have to build those. Here's how you do the thing and here's your boundaries and here's your page of questions if you can't think of anything else.
And inevitably, someone will tell a story and the other person will be like, you need to share that at next Lent. Like it's going to build into people believing in each other's stories and wanting to share them.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrea. This was just wonderful.
This was super fun.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Created Creative.
Yes. And just a quick update. Remember at the beginning, Ruth thought maybe she read that Andrea coined the term pre-ground. And so we did find it. It was featured on the ABC National News. Super cool.
Yeah.
She might be our coolest person.
She's very cool. Please follow us and leave a rating for us on Spotify and iTunes, and also a review on iTunes/Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, go create something.
Go create something!